our core teacher, Stephen Tierney, as our speaker. He has been our gracious Zoom host for these last couple of months as well. Stephen is a Soto Zen priest in the tradition of Suzuki Roshi, who was the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center and Tassajara and Green Gulch. Stephen recently retired as a professor at the California Institute of Integral Studies and is a psychologist doing some, you know, private practice still. And we're so grateful to have you. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you. Nice to see you all. Good to be here. I want to start tonight by reading you a short poem. So I will read it for you, and then if folks want copies, I can arrange to send it to you. But it's called Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so that you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. It is kindness. So I've been thinking a lot the last little while about this idea of kindness and how we treat ourselves and each other and how we are responding as a as individuals and as a Sangha and as communities to the world in which we live. You know, we're taught that when we arise from our zafu or our chair doing meditation, we should take the mind of Zazen with us into the rest of our lives. And that we each make this vow when we sit Zazen. We don't sit with a gaining mind for ourselves. We sit with the idea that sitting Zazen, that being in meditation, actually removes some of the chaos from the world, if only because I'm not talking for 20 minutes or 25 minutes, so you're not. So we get that opportunity. And so it might seem like it's a fairly passive idea. We're sitting for 20 minutes or 30 or an hour or a weekend or a week long retreat and we're being quiet. But Dogen, the founder of Soto Zen, says that the practice of meditation, the practice of Buddhism actually is not passive. It is enthusiastic. It is diligent, it is lively, it's vigorous, and it is engaged. And so what does that mean, that engaged Buddhism? And we've all heard of it. And some of us may even have practiced it or done it, gone on retreats. And there are a number of teachers that have really advanced this idea. Thich Nhat Hanh, Joan Halifax, Bernie Glassman, the recently passed away head of the Zen Peacemakers International. And in my own humble way, for the last 10 years or so, I've been practicing and teaching engaged Buddhism. And so what does it mean exactly? Well, Joan Halifax and Thich Nhat Hanh say that it has two components that we want to think about in our practice. One is direct service to individuals or to the planet. In the Mahayana lineage of Buddhism, we practice particularly the Bodhisattva vows, in which we say that we will live and be lived for the benefit of all beings. Live and be lived for the benefit of all beings. And that's a pretty powerful thing we take on for ourselves. But it's, you know, one step at a time. Norman Fisher, a wonderful Buddhist teacher, says that the world could be otherwise. The world could be otherwise. And it could be otherwise if we simply take one step at a time, one thought at a time, one word at a time, and are careful about the kindness with which we live, which we speak, and which we act. and with which we regard all other beings. And so during this time we've been living in, we certainly had time to think about that. The other component of engaged Buddhism, according to Joan Halifax and others, is the idea of being engaged in social transformation, structural justice, food security, health justice. Most of the people, marriage equality for some in this room, most of us in this, by virtue of the fact that we're here, have probably engaged in some work of social transformation and taken it very strongly. And so those are the two components. One, what we do on an individual basis as ourselves. Two, when we take a look around the world and see what opportunities we might have for walking the Buddha's path in a way that illuminates that path for others. So seems to me that, and all of you, if you've been listening to the news and so forth, that in the next few days and weeks and months, we're going to get up from our zafus and we actually may leave our homes. We may go to work, we may go shopping, we may be able to go and be with other people. Hopefully we're going to do that following some instructions about being cautious, encouraged by public health recommendations about how close we get to each other, how we hold each other, and how we do that. And I think that this is a real opportunity for us who follow the Buddha's path to really take our Buddhism with us out into the public and to take this joint commitment to be one-on-one kind to each other and to be engaged in structural transformation. So I was really moved yesterday when I heard on one of the shows a public health official say that we need to stop looking for easy answers. When will this be over? When can this be done? We need to stop trying to find the right slogan. You know, we're going to find a new normal or the world will be changed. And he said, what we actually need to do is learn to live with COVID-19. It's going to be around and we need to live with it. We need to live in the present moment, aware of the world in which we find ourselves and our brothers and sisters find themselves and our lovers and spouses find themselves, and just figure out how it is that we're going to be part of a world in which there are many different ways that we can be of service to self, to others, and to the world. So as we get into that, I don't want to take a lot of time to give any bad statistics, but I do think we need to take a moment, just a moment of silence, to honor the fact that today in the United States, the number is 80,000 mothers and grandmothers and fathers and friends and children who have died from this illness and who have died partially because of government mismanagement and malfeasance. So let's take just a moment to take a deep breath and send our loving kindness to the families and friends of those 80,000 human beings who are no longer with us. And so those of us on this call, more so than many others in the world, have lived and are living with another virus, and that's the HIV crisis. We also know that that came upon us quickly, although not as quickly as this, and that it also had a lot to do with government inaction and malfeasance. And so we were encouraged back in those days to learn to live with that virus, that it was going to be around for a long time. And the healthcare system and the government systems sort of said, okay, we're just going to have to live with it and be patient and so forth. Well, to date, as we know, 37 million people worldwide have died from HIV over the course of these decades. And those are also human beings, brothers and sisters and daughters and grandmothers. 37 million bodhisattvas who are not walking the path with us anymore. And so I think that we get this chance to say, in this particular place that we live, are we all in this together? As we were saying for the first couple of months of this, every TV ad, every newscast, every public official, every private official, every spiritual person, this together. Together we can get through this. And in the last couple of weeks, of course, as things do, they turned into sort of a cultural war. You know, people saying that this stuff is fake, it's a phony crisis, or that we should become patient and just let things unfold. Well, those numbers I gave you a minute ago say to me that if we are on the Buddha's path, and if we are committed to the two principles of engaged Buddhism, how we show up in the world and how we engage with others and what involvement we have with structural transformation, those aren't choices we get. And any of us who have lived through, as we all have, the death of someone we love and a death of someone very close to us that seemed unnecessary or untimely, we know that what's going on right now is a world full of those sorts of deaths and sicknesses. And so I think our Buddhist practice is that we must be rigorous and diligent and engaged. And I think it's pretty simple. We have in Buddhism what we call metta practice, or loving kindness practice. And that practice is very simple. We first bring peace and ease, a prayer for an intention of peace and ease to ourselves. And we bring that to ourselves so that we can be centered and grounded, so that we may indeed be of service to others. We then, as we do our metta prayers or loving kindness prayers, take that out to the next level, to the folks. If we were doing metta now, which we will at the end when we dedicate the merit, we would then dedicate it to the people on this Zoom call right now, to the 22 of us, 21 of us that I see, 26 now, to the 26 of us. We would then take the prayer from that 26 to all of the people who are in our sanghas and communities, our families, our workplaces, our schools, our neighborhoods. And then we would continue by taking it to folks who we don't know yet, and that we have the opportunity to meet or not, but we can extend loving kindness and peace to them. And then ultimately to people with whom we have difficulty or who challenge us or who frustrate us and make us angry. We take loving kindness and metta to them as well. And so those are all pieces that I can do as a practitioner. I can bring loving kindness to myself, make sure that I'm as healthy as I can be and as living as at ease as I can, and engage, making sure that I'm ready to be of service to all of you. Little things like showing up on Monday night so that we have a sangha to be together in, saying a few words when one is the speaker or when one is a participant, working as Carl does and John and Loki and Trina to make sure that these meetings can happen. All of that is an individual opportunity to be of service. But then the structural transformation is the ways in which we say that we are not going to allow the world to call this fake crisis or to disregard that 80,000 families, sets of families and friends and communities have been so deeply impacted. And you know, 1,300,000 people currently dealing with the virus just in this country alone. So we take care of our health and our physical, our nutrition and exercise. And we do this not because some public health person told us to do it, but because the Buddha taught us and because Shantideva taught us in the path of the Bodhisattva that this is the way we live for the benefit of all beings. And so how do we find the energy to do all that? Another little quick poem that I've read here before, but I want to just read you a couple lines of is, and I read it, it's called In My Middle Years, and it's a Chinese poet from 759 named Wang Wei. And it says, in my middle years, I became fond of the way, or the Tao, and made my home in the foothills of the South Mountain. When the spirit moves me, I go off by myself to see the things that I alone must see, and I follow the stream to its source. And so when that poem gets interpreted, and there's a few more lines in the whole poem, but as that poem gets interpreted, we are seen as following that source, following that stream to its source, following our spiritual path to its source. And that's one of the things that attracted me to Buddhism is knowing that that source is the Buddha nature that we have all been promised that we have by the Buddha. So it's not like I'm here looking for my God somewhere else, or I'm here trying to find a higher power that's out there somewhere. It's very clear that we have, each of us, Buddha nature. And so when we think about following the path, the stream, excuse me, to its source, we have a real opportunity to say, what is my original self? What is my Buddha nature? What kind of man, woman, person do I want to be in the world? And, you know, for me, I've been roughing myself up just a little bit because, you know, I've been in my apartment for 55 days now. And as I said last time I spoke, I have a set of weights that I took out because I thought this will be great. At the time I thought it was 2 or 3 weeks, but I'll be able to lift weights and really fix my, do something good for my body, even beyond whatever I've done over the last few years. I certainly will be able to eat correctly because I can only go to the grocery store every 2 weeks. As I told on myself that I had on Saturday to dust those weights because they've been sitting in the window for 55 days or almost 55 days. And somehow, even though I have a very active, healthy food plan, some chocolate chip cookies ended up in my cupboard the other day. I'm not sure how they got there, unless I actually do a practice where I think about how they got there. So if I follow my stream to the source, and I'm committed to a metta practice and to taking care of myself, then I get these wonderful opportunities just to say, 55 days and a few more to come, give me an opportunity to be still, to build up. I'm taking a retreat right now online with a guy named Brother David Stindl Rast. And it's a 20-day retreat called Engaging Hope and Living in Gratitude. And every day there's some readings and some opportunity to share with other people in the group and watch some videos. So it's really been quite positive. Been doing it for about a week now. But what this person named Brother David Stindl Rast, he's a Catholic monk of some kind of brother, and also a Buddhist meditator. What we have the opportunity to do in times like this is to build up a reserve, a foundation for your practice that you can call on when times aren't so quiet as they are now. And he suggests the times ahead are times when we will be called on for our metta practice, and we will have the opportunity to walk the bodhisattva path and live for the benefit of all beings, walking this Buddhist path. You know, it's the same for folks who are Jewish, Muslims, Christians, and other spiritual paths and commitments that people are living. We spiritual folks will be called on not to let the world pretend to go back to something normal, because whatever that normal was is what got us to a place where we have a virus that's disproportionately attacking people of color, the poor, the elderly. And so that's a system. We had systems before, healthcare systems and nutrition systems and food justice systems that weren't working. So the idea that we've been suffering because we can't get our hair cut or go to the gym, and I'm suffering so much that I want things to go back to exactly the way they were, doesn't really resonate for me as a Buddhist, for me as somebody who's doing a metta practice, to think, what kind of world do I want? Do I want a world that led us to this? I don't think so. In human dynamics and organizational development work, there's a wonderful old teaching that says every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. Every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. And so we're living in some results right now. And so the system that got us here is probably a system that demands or invites this opportunity for social transformation. And as Buddhists, engaged Buddhists, it's one of the two things we concentrate on. Individual action as bodhisattvas or as disciples of the Buddha, and the systemic transformation. And so if every system is perfectly designed to get the results it now gets, and we're seeing structural problems around race and poverty and age and food justice, then I think it's really time for us to build a foundation in these days that we have alone in our apartments and our homes. It's really an opportunity to be the kind of Buddhist that we are invited to be by Thich Nhat Hanh and Bernie Glassman and Joan Halifax, and by the Buddha, him or herself. So I think that as we prepare for the change, you know, we don't know when it's coming exactly, but we know that places are opening up, that people are having an opportunity to do more physical outdoor activity than they were doing before. And we hope that people have the compassion and the wisdom to follow common sense and to follow public health notices and to follow just being basic members of community, to live in community, to live in Sangha. I heard yesterday a quote from the author Lewis Carroll that said, if you do not know where you're going, any road will get you there. But as Buddhists and as folks in our community who've lived through two viruses now, at least in our lifetimes, I think we know what road we want. I know we know where we want to go. We want to go to a world where there's justice, where there's peace. We want to go to a world where we have the opportunity to take care of each other, all of us, in ways that, frankly, in the larger community, we were not doing before this virus brought us all home to think about it for 2 months, 3 months. So I invite you, as you practice for this week, as you go out, to read Naomi's poem, because it's beautiful, if you get a chance. And I'll, in the chat in just a few minutes, I'll put my email address if you want a copy of that poem. You can probably find it on the web, but I can also just send it to you. But so read the poem and use that as an opportunity for meditation and reflection. And then ask yourself these two questions. As shelter in place changes for you as a Buddhist, now what? Very simple, now what? And as we arise from our zazen and our sangha and we leave our sanctuary, ask yourself the question, where are you going? What kind of world do you want to live in? So those two questions, now what? And what kind of world do you want to live in? And I think we've had 55 days and we'll have a few more to think about that. And as you look around at these 27, 28 pictures, we have people that will help us do that. We can be mindful, we can be practice loving kindness. And the Dalai Lama says that there are 84,000, a number I'm sure he made up, 84,000 Dharma doors. So nobody has to do it exactly the way I'm doing it. And I don't have to do it exactly the way anybody tells me in a rule book or a set of regulations or bylaws. But what we do get the opportunity to do is to look first at your own picture on the screen and look around at the rest of us. And I'm sure that you will, as I am, be convinced that everyone here, including me, is deserving of our love, compassion, of justice and of equality. And together, as we get up and move, we get a chance to do that. Thank you.
Stephen, thank you. Thank you very much for that talk and your reminders of what we're really doing and what we hope to do. So as we close, let's sit together for a minute and we will do a meta practice.